I didn't know this morning that this was No Boundaries Tie Day, and so I didn't wear mine. But Ken did, and not wanting to allow him to outdo me, I thought I would wear mine tonight. I think I've worn it here once before. This being the fifth Sunday evening of the month of August, Robert ran out of people that were willing or had the time to fill the slot this evening and asked me last week if I would be willing to do it, and he knows he can usually count on me for that, and so I agreed to do it. By the way, do you know that this month of August has 5 Sundays, 5 Mondays, and 5 Tuesdays? That's a rarity. You've lived to experience it. You won't live until it happens again in 823 years. Just kind of a rare little incident. This morning, Tim asked me if I were ready to bring the lesson this evening, and I told him I was as ready as I was going to be, but I didn't explain to him why I wasn't going to take any more time this afternoon to get ready. And I'll explain to you that our hometown in Hawaii was playing for the Little League World Series Championship against Japan today, the little town of Waipahu, where we lived. Unfortunately, the score was 4-1 in favor of Japan. But they won it all 3 years ago, and so maybe it was Japan's time to do it. Before I begin my lesson, I want to explain something to you. If you received an email from me this past week, and I know that many of you did, that you couldn't believe that I would have sent to you, you're right. I wouldn't have sent it to you. I couldn't have sent it to you, and I didn't send it to you. Sometime Thursday night, my computer was infected with a malware virus, and it took over my computer and sent emails to everybody on my contact list. And the email was advertising from a Canadian drug company, a product that I would not really be willing to endorse or promote. And so if you receive that, I hope that you deleted it so that your computer also was not infected. But if you don't know for sure, you might want to run a scan on your computer and try to eliminate it if it's there. I worked all day Friday and Saturday to get rid of it on 2 of my computers and think I've succeeded at that. So please understand it wasn't me sending it, but that Canadian drug company capturing my contact list and sending it to everybody there. I don't know how many, probably 100, 150 different people got that from me. And not only that, it got on Mars list, who have a lot of other people on there. So I think, though, he eliminated that before it got too bad. Anyway, the question that I want to deal with in our study this evening is, will we know one another in heaven? That came up in one of my classes recently, and because it did, I thought, well, maybe that's a question that others would like to study with me about. I expressed my opinion on it at that time, and so I just decided that this evening we'll spend a little bit of time trying to answer that question as best we can from what the Scriptures teach with regard to it. We don't have a whole lot of information in the Bible about that particular question. In fact, there are a lot of questions that we would like to have answered for us with regard to heaven, but that the Scriptures don't answer for us, and we'll just have to wait until we get there to find the answers to all of those. With regard to this question, some would answer, yes, I believe we will recognize one another in heaven. Others answer, oh no, we can't recognize one another in heaven. For in a number of reasons, one of the most often expressed that I hear is, what if we get to heaven and find out that our children are not there, or our husband or wife is not there? How could we possibly be as happy as the Lord says we are going to be in heaven if some of them are not there? And therefore, the judgment on the part of such a person is, somehow or the other, we're just going to completely lose our memory in the change that's going to take place in us at the resurrection when we are given a new body, so that it will not be possible for us to know who gets to heaven and who doesn't get to heaven. And so we won't have to worry about whether someone else that we wanted to go to heaven is there or not. But let's look at the question tonight and see what we can find out from the scriptures about it. Assuming that we and our friends and our loved ones get to heaven, will we recognize and know one another there? Some say yes, some say no, others say I don't know. Well, let's look at it. We hope, of course, that we will. I think most of us would like to think that we can recognize our friends and family, some of the Old Testament saints, certainly the Lord himself, we'd like to be able to recognize when we get to heaven. So I think probably most of us would come down on the side of, yes, we would like to be able to recognize one another in heaven. The question, though, is, does the Bible really tell us one way or the other about whether we're going to recognize one another in heaven? And the answer to that really is not directly, but the Bible does, in several different places, seem to assume that we will be able to recognize each other when we get to heaven, and it is those passages that we want to refer to this evening. First, let's just begin with the question, why wouldn't we recognize one another in heaven? Would it be the result of our minds being changed in some way? We know that our physical bodies are going to change into a spiritual body, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of heaven, and so certainly our bodies are going to change. But the question is, will our minds also change so that we won't be able to remember or to recognize others in heaven that we knew here on the earth? And if so, why is that change necessary? If our minds are not to be changed, can we not safely say that if I have the same mind in heaven that I have here on the earth, wouldn't I be able to recognize my wife or my children or my friends, my brothers and sisters in Christ whom I hope to see in heaven? And I think the answer certainly is yes. If our minds do not change, there is no reason why we shouldn't be able to recognize one another in heaven. We have the story found in Luke, the 16th chapter, verses 19 through 31, of the rich man and Lazarus. Both of them died. The rich man went into the part of the Hadean world, referred to by Luke as the place of torments. The poor man, Lazarus, went in also to the Hadean world, into the place that was called Abraham's bosom. The rich man recognized Lazarus. He also recognized Abraham. Abraham recognized both the rich man and Lazarus, and the rich man was able to recognize both. That's not heaven, I understand that. But it is a place of the disembodied spirits when it is evident that the people there, the rich man, Lazarus, and Abraham, all had the same minds, the same memory, the same knowledge that they had while they were back on the earth. And they were able to recognize each other. We'll look at that a little bit more just a few minutes later on. The rich man, while he was in the Hadean world, was concerned about the fate of his brothers. He was in a place of torments. He didn't want his brothers to come there. And so he besought Abraham to send Lazarus at first back to persuade his brothers to do what they needed to do to prevent their coming to the place of torments. Abraham said, no, that can't happen. And then he besought Abraham to send someone else to his brothers to prevent their coming to this place. And Abraham's answer was, they have Moses and the prophets. That is, they have the Old Testament scriptures written by Moses and the prophets. They can take heed to those things if they will. They can prevent their joining you in this place of torments after their death. So although the Bible teaches that our bodies are to be changed 1 Corinthians, the 15th chapter, verses 51 and 52, and we'll look at that in detail a little bit more later. It isn't necessary for us to conclude that our minds also, along with our bodies, changing from a natural physical body to a spiritual body, it isn't necessary to conclude that our minds, our memory, our knowledge is all going to be lost so that we could not recognize one another in heaven. We certainly understand, I believe, that our minds are a part of the inner man, of our spirit or of our soul, which is made in the image of God. Why would we think that our mind is going to be changed in such a way when we enter into heaven that we will have no knowledge of things that transpired here on the earth, no memory of our loved ones, and are simply starting all over again on a fresh tablet with minds that are completely blank in heaven? I don't believe there is any reason why we need to make that conclusion. A change into the incorruptible body that Paul says is going to take place for each of us at the resurrection should, I believe, enhance our memory, not destroy it or handicap it in any way. So to say that we won't recognize one another is to say that, basically, what's going to happen, we're going to lose our memory. We're going to lose our minds. We're going to lose the knowledge that we had of our existence here on the earth. And I think that there are several places in the scriptures that indicate that isn't going to happen. We are going to have knowledge of what we did and of the experiences that we had here on the earth, and that we will indeed be able to recognize others who are in heaven with us. The concept then of a future life suggests that we will have a memory. First of all, there will be no connection between our lives on earth and our lives in heaven. That is, if we don't have any memory, there won't be any connection between our lives here on the earth and our lives in heaven. If we lose our memory, if our minds are left blank upon our going to heaven, heaven will not be like a second life. All we will know is our life in heaven. We won't know anything at all about our existence on the earth because our minds are gone. Our knowledge of what happened here on the earth has disappeared. We won't even know that we're in a second life, an eternal life, because we won't be able to remember the first life that we had while we were on the earth. If there is no memory in heaven, how shall we be able to identify ourselves? How will I know that I am me? If I can't know that Joan is my wife, how can I know, in fact, that I am who I am and that I had a life on the earth that resulted in my being able to come to heaven? In fact, the truth of the matter is, if we're going to lose our minds and our memory and our knowledge altogether, we're not even going to know whether we made it to heaven, because there won't be anybody back on the earth to compare it to. We won't know anything about our previous life. Our memory is going to be blank, and so all we'll know is, whoever I am, I'm in heaven. So I wouldn't know whether I made it to heaven or not. We know ourselves now only as we are able to remember our past. Have you ever heard of someone that has amnesia? I think there was a fellow that popped up in Seattle here a few years ago who could not remember who he was. Didn't know his wife, family, didn't know what he had done in his previous life. He had no idea of where his home was. His memory was simply gone. And that's all he knew. Some seem to think that that's the way it's going to be in heaven, and if we are to lose our minds and not be able to remember any life that we had here on the earth, then that's the way it's going to be. But we must have some identity in heaven. Let's look now to see, those are all just some kind of logical reasonings that I believe suggest that when we get to heaven, we will be able to recognize one another. Now, let's look at some scriptures that may offer some evidence to the truthfulness of that claim. Look with me to Luke, the 23rd chapter, verses 42 and 43. where Luke writes, "Then he said to Jesus, 'Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom.' And Jesus said to him, 'Assuredly, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise.'" You know the circumstance. While Jesus was hanging on the cross, one of the two thieves acknowledged him and who he was, and evidently was penitent for the life that he had lived, and recognizing who Jesus was, he knew that Jesus had the power to exercise some control on his future destiny. And so he asked Jesus, "Lord, I want you to remember me when you come into your kingdom." I don't know to what extent the thief that was hanging there had any real knowledge about the kingdom of heaven and exactly whether he knew what he was really asking Jesus. But he knew that Jesus had some power, and he also wanted Jesus to recognize him and to remember him when he came into his kingdom. Seeing that faith and that awareness and hearing that request from the thief, Jesus said to him, "Today, you and I, upon our physical death, are both going to be in paradise." Now, I understand the paradise that Jesus was referring to there to be the same as Abraham's bosom that we looked about a while ago, where both the rich man and Lazarus, or where the Lazarus went, and in the Hadean world where the rich man also went. Paradise is the same as Abraham's bosom. That's where Jesus went after he died, and the thief on the cross also went there with him. Now then, paradise not being heaven, but in the Hadean world, the intermediate state of the soul, where disembodied spirits go to await the judgment and the resurrection, that Jesus was promising this thief that to pass from life here on the earth to life in paradise, where he would be with the Lord, and for him to be aware of whether or not Jesus fulfilled that promise, he was going to have to be able to recognize Jesus in paradise. Understand again, I know that's not heaven, but it was in a state of the disembodied spirit in which Jesus at least acknowledged, and I believe the thief understood that, we're going to have some recognizable identity so that I'll be able to recognize you, Lord, in heaven, and you'll be able to recognize me. The penitent thief was going to be with Jesus, but without his memory. If his memory was going to disappear, if his knowledge of everything that had transpired here on the earth was going to be lost, how would he know who he was, or that he had gotten to paradise? That would be something that he could not see any relationship between his life there in paradise and his life back on the earth if his mind were to be completely gone. Look also to Matthew the 17th chapter, verses 1 through 3, where this is recorded for us. "Now after 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John, his brother, led them up to a high mountain by themselves, and he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. And behold, Moses and Elijah appeared to them," to Peter, James, and John, "talking with him," that is, talking with Jesus. We know that Elijah had died and gone to heaven, according to 2 Kings, the 2nd chapter and verse 11. But then, do you suppose that Moses and Elijah did not recognize one another? That Moses looked across there and saw this other person there and say, "I wonder who that is." No, it's evident from the story that Moses and Elijah recognized one another, and that in the narrative we're told that Jesus talked with Moses and Elijah, and that the three disciples also recognized Moses and Elijah along with Jesus being transfigured. Again, that's not heaven. That was a transfiguration in which Moses and Elijah appeared with Jesus, but having died, they were in a disembodied condition. But still, They were recognizable to Peter, James, and John, and to Jesus. Moses and Elijah were, so that it seems to be indicating that when we die and our physical bodies return to the dust from which they have come, that we, if we are to enter into paradise or Abraham's bosom, that we're still going to have identifiable characteristics, so that we'll be able to recognize one another, just as Moses and Elijah were able to recognize each other, and as the disciples were able to recognize them. Moses and Elijah, indeed, each did have a distinct identity that enabled them to be recognized by the apostles. Now, I don't know the answer to that question, how that Peter, James, and John recognized Moses and Elijah. They had never seen them before. But evidently there was some kind of revelation given to them on this occasion that made it possible for them to recognize Moses and Elijah as distinct persons and for them to be distinguishable from one another. Would the conversation between Jesus and Moses and Elijah, thank you, Ron, I was preaching in Harrison, Arkansas a couple of weeks ago, and I had the same problem I'm having now, and I had prepared myself to bring a little cup of water up, knowing I might have that problem, and when I picked it up and started to drink it, but didn't, the problem went away. And a couple of days later, I was having dinner with a couple, and she said, I want to know what healing powers there are in your hand to just hold a cup of water and make your cough go away. And I explained that it just went away by itself, but I'll take a little bit of that and see if that helps. Would the conversation between Jesus and Moses and Elijah have made any sense if the other two had no idea of who the other one was? Evidently, Moses recognized Elijah, Elijah recognized Moses, and Jesus recognized both. Now then look at Matthew 8:11. And I say to you that many will come from the east and the west and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. That's a great promise, isn't it? That you and I someday will have the privilege of being able to sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and the 12 sons of Jacob and so many other saints that were in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. Paul and Peter and James and John and all of the rest of them, to be able to recognize them and to know that we're there in heaven with them and to be able to talk with them. That's the promise that Jesus is making here in this text. However, if in heaven we won't be able to identify one another, how in the world are we going to know that we're sitting down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? I'm just going to look at those three fellows and I wonder who they are. We don't know who they are. If they don't have any recognizable identity, that's about the only conclusion we can ask. I'm Ben Shropshire. What's your name? We'd have to ask. So that passage seems to indicate to us that we'll be able to recognize the three of them at least. What value would it be if we cannot remember anything about the patriarchs? What joy would you find in talking with Abraham if your mind is a complete blank and you don't know anything at all, you have no knowledge of what happened and what Abraham did and who he was? That would just mean nothing at all to us if we cannot have the knowledge that we have learned from the scriptures about who Abraham was. And there would be no benefit whatever to us to sit down and talk with them if we don't know who Abraham is, if we cannot recognize him. What will Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob talk about if they can't remember their identity? If Isaac can't even know that Abraham was his dad, what benefit is going to be for him to talk to him? Or Jacob, if he doesn't know who Abraham is? This passage seems to indicate to me that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are going to be able to recognize one another, and that we are going to be privileged to sit down and talk with them also. Will be able to recognize them as well as they might be able to recognize us. If we are able to recognize Old Testament saints whom we have never known, and You know, I wouldn't know Abraham if he came walking down the street today. But somehow or the other, he's going to have some identity and will be identified for us so that we will know who Abraham is. And our knowledge of Abraham will still be in our minds to make it interesting and wonderful for us to sit down and to talk with him. What value would it be if we cannot remember anything at all about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Who's Jacob? I don't know. Why then have any value in sitting down to talk with him? There really wouldn't be, because we wouldn't know anything at all about his life. What will Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob talk about if they can't remember their lives and their identity? So then, if we are able, and I already recognize, I realize that I've already gone through this, if we are able to recognize Old Testament saints whom we have never known, why doesn't it seem reasonable to understand that we will be able to recognize one another as well? Now then, look at Matthew 25, verses 37 through 40. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come and to visit you? And the king will answer and say to them, Assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you were doing it also to me. Here is a picture, a portrayal, a scenario of the judgment day, when we have already been raised and given our new spiritual bodies. We stand before God in judgment. And Jesus says, you know, you're a good person because when I was hungry, you fed me. And I scratched my head and I said, Lord, I never remember when you were hungry. When in the world did I feed you? Or Jesus says, when I was thirsty, you gave me a drink. I don't remember doing that to you, Lord. And Jesus then answers and says, when you did it to the least of these, my brethren, you also did it to me. This passage indicates that at least in the judgment day, after the resurrection has taken place, and we have received the immortal body that we shall live eternally with, that we still have a mind to remember things that took place on the earth. As they look back, trying to figure out what Jesus was saying, they could not remember ever having fed Jesus when he was hungry or given him a drink when he was thirsty. And so that seems to indicate that after the resurrection, even though our bodies have changed to a spiritual body, that we will still have our memory as to what we have done and what we have not done. They couldn't remember ever having done what Jesus was telling them they had done. The things remembered were of real events in a real person's life. Now then, look at Luke 16, 23. I said we'd come back to this, and this is where we are coming back to it. And being in torments in Hades, he, that is the rich man, lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off, and he saw Lazarus in his bosom. Then he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, and likewise Lazarus received evil things. But now he is comforted here in Abraham's bosom, and you are tormented over there in the place of torments. Then he, that is the rich man, said, Therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, that is, send Lazarus to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torments. Abraham, please send Lazarus back to see my brothers and tell them what they need to do so they won't come to this place of torments. Now, what does that story tell us? Whether you regard this as a parable or as a real story of something that really happened. The facts are true, nevertheless. That of something that could have if it did not actually take place. Though the location, again, is not in heaven, it's in Hades, the place of disembodied spirits, where the spirits of those who have died go to await the resurrection and the judgment. Nevertheless, the story suggests the kind of life that we will have after death. The rich man knew who he was, and he remembered that he had five brothers still back there on the earth. He still knew that those five brothers were living a wicked, ungodly life, and he was very aware of the fact that if they continued to live the way that he had lived, that they were going to wind up in exactly the same place where he was, and he didn't want that to happen. So he asked Abraham to send Lazarus back to them, to warn them not to come to this place. He also remembered his life. He knew exactly what kind of life he had lived and that he deserved to be where he was. He remembered his brothers, and he knew what their fate was going to be. And I don't have any doubt at all that should his brothers have died and have joined him there in the Hadean world, in the place of torment, that he would have been able to recognize them just as he had remembered them while they were on the earth. If after death we are able to remember people, places, and events of our life and to recognize Old Testament saints, why wouldn't we be able to recognize one another as well? That's the question that you need to ponder in considering what you believe the answer to our question is. Will we be able to recognize one another in heaven? Look at then at some of the arguments that are made against the idea of our being able to recognize one another when we get to heaven. First, some say, how can we recognize one another in heaven when we shall be formless and featureless spirit beings? We're just going to be some kind of a ghost floating around without any form or any peculiar characteristics or any real identity. Well, I don't know where people got the idea that that's the way we're going to be when we get to heaven. For the scriptures tell us that we're definitely going to have a body, albeit a spiritual body, not a natural body of flesh and bones or blood and flesh, as that cannot inherit the kingdom of heaven. But the scriptures do teach us that we're going to have a body. Look at 1 Corinthians 15, verses 35 through 44, where we read from the Apostle Paul, who says, "But someone will say, how are the dead raised up? And with what body do they come? Foolish one, what you sow is not made alive unless it dies. And what you sow, you do not sow that body that shall be, but mere grain, perhaps wheat or some other grain. But God gives it a body as he pleases, and to each seed its own body." You know, when you take that little grain of corn or a bean and plant it in the ground, that this magnificent stalk comes up and it bears several more ears of corn. What you see here now that has been produced by that little tiny grain of corn that you planted in the earth is something that is entirely different from what you planted. That tiny little thing there with the germ in it. When you planted it, it became something entirely different from what you planted in the ground. That's the point that the Apostle Paul is making there. Now he continues to say, "All flesh is not the same flesh, but there is one kind of the flesh of men, another the flesh of animals, another of fish, and another of birds. There are also celestial bodies and terrestrial bodies." All he's doing here is trying to say that there are different kinds of bodies. And to say that you're going to lose one body doesn't mean you're going to be bodiless, but that you're going to have a different kind of a body than that which you had here on the earth. There are also celestial bodies and terrestrial bodies, but the glory of the celestial is one and the glory of the terrestrial is another. There is one glory of the sun, another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars. For one star differs from another star in glory, in brightness, for instance. so also is the resurrection of the dead. So Paul says, everything I've just said to you, I want you now to apply to the knowledge that you have with regard to what's going to happen when we are raised from the dead. The body is sown in corruption. It is raised in incorruption. There's the difference. This physical body is sown in corruption. It'll die. It'll return to the dust from which it came. It's subject to sickness and accidents and finally to death when it returns to the dust. But when the resurrection takes place, it's going to be an incorruptible body that will not be subject to all of those things that were true of the other body. This physical body that you have now is sown in dishonor, but it's going to be raised in honor. It is sown in weakness. Those of us who are getting up in years know what that means. We get weaker and slower and have a whole lot more pains and afflictions than we did when we were 20 years old. So it is sown in weakness, but whenever the resurrection takes place, it is going to be raised in power. Won't that be good to know that this old physical body that's just about worn out, and we have to admit there are things we can't do anymore, and even when we try to do what we'd like to do, it takes us all day to get it done, that when we are raised from the dead, it's going to be a powerful body that God gives to us. It is sown a natural body. It is raised a spiritual body. There is a natural body, and the whole conclusion of the matter is there is also a spiritual body. So get rid of this idea that we're going to be kind of like Casper the Ghost, just floating around in a bed sheet with no form, no substance, nothing that is identifiable. That's not what's going to happen. We're going to be given a spiritual body like that of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who were recognizable and will be recognizable to us, so that we need to understand at least that it seems that we too are going to have a spiritual body that will have identifiable characteristics by which our friends and others will be able to know us. The rich man, Abraham, and Lazarus were recognizable even as disembodied spirits. If we are to recognize one another in heaven, then we will most certainly miss our friends and loved ones that won't be there. That's a second argument that is made against the idea of our being able to recognize. Would I be unhappy if my wife isn't there? Well, let's try to answer that question. How could we possibly be happy if a loved one we realize did not make it to heaven? If so, we should all be the more diligent to try to make sure that those that we love are prepared to go to heaven when they die. On this earth, though, we find ways to be happy in this life when our loved ones are taken away from us by death. Even so, there will be many more reasons in heaven for us to be happy that will temper our feelings of loss if we have to realize that a loved one did not make it to heaven. Heaven is a place that we cannot really even begin to compare anything of in the way of happiness and joy that's here on the earth, such as we will experience when we get to heaven. Heaven is going to be such a beautiful, wonderful place where we're going to live throughout all of eternity that will temper any feelings of loss that we may have when we realize that someone we loved did not make it. So that if we can be happy here on the earth knowing that we've lost a loved one, in spite of that, certainly the Lord will provide a way for us to be happy in heaven, even though we know that a loved one didn't make it. In Matthew 22, verses 29 through 30, Jesus answered and said to them, "You are mistaken, not knowing the scriptures nor the power of God. For in the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but they are like the angels of God in heaven." Marriage pertains to the physical body, that is, to the satisfaction of physical desires and the procreation of children. Neither of these are going to be needed in heaven. In conclusion, then, let's try to sum all of this up, and I'll leave the lesson with you. Surely the fact that we shall be able to see and to recognize one another in heaven should be another reason for why we should want to go there and why we should want our loved ones to go there and to do everything that we can, both for our own benefit and for their benefit, to see that all of the necessary preparations are made so that we can indeed enjoy one another's company in heaven. My question to you is, are you planning to go to heaven? I hope so. And if you're not ready, if you hadn't made preparations, we want to invite you tonight to take the steps that you need to take right now to get ready to go to heaven. If you aren't a Christian, that's the first thing you need to do. Believe with all of your heart that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. Repent of all of your past sins. Make a confession of your faith in Jesus Christ as the Son of God. Then be buried with the Lord Jesus Christ by baptism into his death, so that you may be raised to walk in newness of life and living faithfully, working and serving God for the rest of your life. Then in the judgment day, you may hear the Lord say to you, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Enter into the joys of thy Lord." And you will then be able to experience eternity in heaven, and I believe to know and to recognize your loved ones, your friends, your family, your neighbors, who also will join you in heaven. Do you want to go to heaven? Why not? Won't you come tonight while together we stand and sing the song of invitation?
Just as